we go, a Wednesday edition, Mr. Irrelevant. I'm Alex Stroff with you from the Gruber Law Offices, One Call, That's All Studio, at the Avenue downtown Milwaukee. Josh DiMaggio's here. Will Summers is here. No Hunter Vaughn today. He is off on this fine Wednesday. Plenty of Packers, Brewers, all the in-betweens to get to today, including a couple of things. Is Packers public, or not public, open to the media, OTA's practice number two, went down yesterday, so a couple of highlights and things to dive into from there. Not necessarily from things that happened on the field, because it's hard to put a lot of stock into. What do they refer to it as, Joshy? Like underwear warriors or something like that?
Yeah, underwear Olympics.
That's it, yeah. So it's hard to take away anything, despite our curiosity and obviously how the team's looking or how some of the rookies are looking, et cetera, et cetera. It's hard to really have any grand takeaways from OTA's practices. I remember, though, a few years ago, Joshy, and I'm sure you remember this too, I believe OTA's was when the Luke Musgrave hype began his rookie year, and ultimately
fastest mile per hour on the field.
Yeah, right. Which is great. You know, we love the excitement, and you know, obviously for those of us that are missing football at this point in time, we get excited about little things like that. And you're allowed to get excited, right? Matthew Golden's doing some cool things, or having him in motion at the line of scrimmage. He looks quick. He looks like, you know, I think it was Andy Herman who tweeted it. It looks like he was just born to play football, which is all great and lovely, but it's hard to take anything away of substance from the OTAs, even as much as I want to, Joshy.
Yeah. I mean, there's not really, and until pads come on, you really don't get anything. And even then, it's not a good estimation. The thing is, if you're able to parse it out and if you're able to see consistent talk about some player throughout OTA's mini camp and training camp, then that's probably a good indicator, because the Luke Musgrave thing mattered. He was an absolute part of that offense right away as a rookie. Now, he didn't convert all of those into as big of opportunities as maybe he could have. But the fact that we were getting the hype about him, and then pretty much out of the gate as a rookie, which, as we know, tight end is a pretty damn difficult position for rookies to play.
Sure is.
Because you're learning basically two different positions. So the fact that, like, they were calling plays for him because he was such an asset and viewed as so talented, that's stuff worth noting. Now, if we remember, Rashawn Gary was an unstoppable force for one day of training camp last year, and people got all excited about that, and it turned out he was probably just going against not so great of tackles in practice at that time. Zach Tom was actively working back from like a torn pec. So,
because everybody had a torn pec last year, including the head coach.
Yes. So you have to be quite discerning, but much like the baseball season, you can't get too high or too low based on any singular piece of information.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to disrupt the excitement that comes along with OTAs and football and having those guys on the field. It's just, it's hard to take anything away of substance of, oh, wait a minute, like, this guy's going to be awesome, right? It's just, it's hard to take that away from it.
Yeah, the biggest thing is opportunity. Who's getting opportunity that you didn't expect?
And has there been anything that surprises
I've seen,
you?
Was it Kadar Holman has had some buzz about him? Now, that might disappear in like 2 weeks and we don't hear about him anymore. But if they're saying, hey, he's continually running with the ones throughout training camp, because right now basically everybody runs with the ones at some given point. But if he's a factor and constantly on the field with their main starting defensive lineup, that's a guy we didn't expect to be a contributor, who's going to most likely then contribute throughout the season.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that breaks out. Now, obviously, the defensive backfield's kind of, I don't know, what's the right word? In flux right now? Kadar Holman, is he still on the roster?
I might have used a wrong, incorrect name for...
He might. Are you thinking Ketan Oladapo?
Nope.
Huh. I don't know. I didn't see any of this, so I'm surprised by that. But I believe you, because it's OTAs. I don't know. Anything's possible in OTAs. But also, I haven't read every report because, like I've been saying for the last 5 minutes, hard to take anything.
He's part of the Texans, so I'm going to look up the name that I'm... It's like a guy who was on the practice squad all season.
Oh, Kalen King.
Nope.
Okay. I give up. I'm no longer taking
probably a good bet. Continue the show. I will find the name here.
So to my point on... The things you are going to hear or see or read from OTAs generally are not going to be...
Kamal Hayden.
Oh, I didn't see this.
Yes.
So he, I mean, but without Jair, he's a corner. He's probably playing up a little bit. Now, I don't know if Jair will be on the roster or not. I still lean towards I think he will be.
You're still there?
I'm still there. Where are you at? You're still gone?
I'm as convicted as I was prior to the Matt Schneidman report about an offered contract. I think he was offered a contract, and he was told this is it.
When are we going to hit ahead with this one? When does he arrive?
When he shows up.
Which is when? Next week?
He said mandatory minicamp, or that per the report from Matt Schneidman, I should say, is he was going to show up. And he's not showing up out of the goodness of his heart. He's showing up to force a decision. He's showing up to say, bleeper, get off the pot to the Packers.
Totally.
Do something here.
Mandatory minicamp begins a week from yesterday.
Yeah. So cut me or give me a contract I'm willing to sign. Or I'm going to continue to show up.
I'm just, regardless of how it plays out, I'm just looking forward to a freaking resolution one way or another, man. I'm sick of the waiting game, which I don't think any of us, you know, when this all began towards the end of the season and Jair at locker cleanout kind of stormed off and said, I don't even know if I'll be here. I think since that point, we all knew, okay, it's probably over and it'll happen rather quickly, right? The Packers will be swift in their decision-making and not how this has gone.
How much are you just wish-casting right now?
In terms of Jair?
Yeah, because I find it hard to believe, to listen to the people we know and the way they've talked about it, and then hearing Keyshawn Nixon's comments about it, which were as non-committal as humanly possible.
Correct, yes.
Even sounded more negative, I would say, as he continued to talk there.
Yeah,
not negative about Jair, but negative about the idea of him returning. Yes, I don't think he was. I think his teammates like him. I think that's pretty clear with the way we've heard Xavier McKinney and some, and even Jordan Love talk about Jair. But I mean, maybe I'm listening to the wrong people on this. But I feel like everybody's kind of telling us the same thing.
No, I agree with you. And obviously, the biggest part of all of the Jair situation, and we'll get to some other OTA stuff and audio from OTAs yesterday in just a minute. But I think the Jair thing and why I'm, you know, we'll use your term, wish casting or projecting that I still think the most likely option is he's a Green Bay Packer in 2025. Has more to do with him than it does with some of the things that are said around him, including you mentioned Keyshawn Nixon yesterday and obviously Brian Gutekunst earlier in the offseason flat out saying they're looking for a trade partner, which is pretty damning. I think it has to do with, okay, the Packers offered him a restructured contract. He has not signed the restructured contract, which means it was not to his liking. It was way more beneficial for the Packers. It was probably a low end on salary, maybe some opportunities, escalators, if you will, incentive-based contract to build up to maybe close to his original salary. But the ultimate point is, no matter what that restructure looks like, Joshy, it's going to be an opportunity to make more money than he would on the open market. Now, he obviously still makes some money if they end up releasing him, but I don't know. The dude with a chip on his shoulder, 1 year left on the contract.
So I think that idea is flawed, because if he was given that opportunity to do that, to get as what he viewed was more money than he would get on the open market, what reason would he have to have not signed it?
I don't believe he views it that way with the contract he was offered. But I think there is a meet in the middle portion that is still very possible for both sides.
I think the middle for the Packers is 75 our way, 25 yours.
Probably.
Yeah, that's what.
But I don't think that's what the contract was. And I don't know. I don't have the information on that.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, and we'll probably get more information about it.
I would guess so, yeah.
Unless he comes back, and then we'll have
information on it.
Yeah. We'll get the contract, and then we won't hear what happened prior to that. If he ends up somewhere else, but I have a feeling we'll know damn well the offer the Packers made.
Real quick, the other part of it, before we get back to OTAs, is I can't convince myself they're a better football team if he's not on the roster.
And I think that's also probably coloring your opinion a little bit, is you're having a hard time understanding and believing that the Packers would feel secure with the defensive backfield they currently have, which I think is founded. I certainly don't think they're world beaters by any means.
No.
And I think a healthy and playing Jair Alexander raises the bar a lot. And I think Brian Gutekunst and Everyone else understands that.
Everybody would agree on that.
They just don't view him as a reliable enough asset to commit enough money to. And he does have, and he has a history of acting out, which also would color your opinion on how is this going to go. Because, like, you'll end up in a spot, and I've sort of was thinking about this, where what's stopping Jair from, you know, if they say, for every game you're active, you get X amount of monies, X amount of dollars.
Monies.
You get X amount of dollars. What's stopping him from saying, I'm good to go, and then doing the 10 snaps and I'm done thing? And now the Packers are going to be like, well, we're not playing you. You are not going to be, because that's ultimately up to the team.
It's the juggling act of, is the headache worth it?
Right.
Or is the juice worth the squeeze?
Right. And do we think the headache will go away because Jair knows it's probably his last year and he's seeking another contract, so he's going to play as much as he can, as good as he can? Or will we get into the back and forth of the guy who had no problem foregoing $700,000 because he didn't like Joe Barry? Like, it sounds so easy and simple on its surface, and then you start... And I don't want to say Jair is a bad character, but when you get into his character and some of the things that have happened, you have a hard time feeling secure with the way you would have to try and make a contract.
Totally.
Work.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it sounds like next week, finally, we're going to get a solution because he's going to show up to Green Bay. And that's going to force somebody's hand one way or another.
And I believe a team can kind of tell you just to pound sand. Like, you're allowed to be in the building.
Yeah, he's under contract.
But we have no obligation to put you on the field.
Right.
Like, you're there, you're count as attendance, but guess what? You're not doing anything. So while we go out, you can stand on the sideline and watch, or probably he wouldn't even do that. He'd probably stay back and... But they, like, the last thing they want to do is pay him to be injured, his full contract, if he does anything in the offseason.
Oh, 100%, right? We talked about this last week. The idea of, whoopsies, the plate slipped and landed on my big toe type thing. So
You can also not rule out, and I think the Packers believe Jair has sat out games he shouldn't.
I would agree with that as their feeling.
And you can't rule out him finding a reason to then say, oh, looks like I'm going on the IR. Guess what? You guys are paying me.
And that's why your side on this, I completely understand it. I just think them offering a restructured contract shows at least some sort of willingness to run this thing back. Whereas a David Bakhtiari, for example, I don't think we ever had this, at least this late into the game, like it got with Bakhtiari. It was pretty clear what the future held for Bakhtiari and the Packers. Now with Jair, maybe it's the same story. Maybe it's a little different. I think it's a little different. I still think it's the most likely option, but that's to say, you know, it's 34% he's on the roster, 33% he's cut, and 33% he's traded. Right, I mean, it's not a ginormous gap, probably a little bit more than 34%, but I'm not saying, oh, it's a 75% chance he'll be on the roster and 25% he won't. I just can't go that high. But that's what the restructured contract tells me. But maybe I'll be wrong, maybe I'll be right. We'll find
out. I don't know what your game plan is for the rest of this program, but what did you make of Zach Tom and the way Matt LaFleur sort of tamped down any idea of him being in competition and then gave him kudos for being in attendance while seeking a contract extension?
Yeah.
Because this conversation, when Stenovich decided to go out there, we were having the debate of, what do you mean he's in? He got the third most all pro votes out of any tackle in the league.
Right.
Why would he be in a competition with what we know? And then we were debating, is it something to do with his contract? And then Matt LaFleur kind of came out and said, he's our right tackle and he's here.
Yeah, it's super strange.
It kind of feels like Matt LaFleur sending a message to the front office.
That's what I got out of it as well.
Get this guy a deal.
Yeah, get it done.
Quit. Right? Quit bleeping around.
Quit bleeping around. Yeah.
I was going to say the D word.
well, it'd be fair in this context.
Right.
I had pretty much the same takeaway as you. Is it seems like Matt LaFleur is backing his guy up. He understands how important he is. He's young. He's the future, you know, of this offensive line. Given that Elgton Jenkins' future is relatively uncertain after this year, Obviously, Sean Ryan is in a contract year, as is Zach Tom, as is Rashid Walker. So it seems like he is advocating for who he knows will be the anchor of this offensive line for the foreseeable future. And yeah, it's just strange. The offensive line as a whole is kind of a weird story to me coming out of OTAs right now. Obviously, no Elton Jenkins as he moves over to center, wants to kind of solidify his financial future as he nears the age of 30. And we know what that means when you're a Green Bay Packer. You won't be on the roster very much longer. So yeah, we will see on the offensive line. But what I do have on the docket for the rest of this program, Joshy, or at least the near future of this program, I am really good. Really might be strong. I am good at identifying strengths of my co-hosts. You are really good at psychological stuff.
Uh-huh.
You're good at breaking down the mindset of people, including me. Now, this topic is not going to be about me, though.
What a relief.
you can do that in the rest of the show. Which you already do the rest of the show. We've made it 17 minutes without you calling me dumb, though. That's a new record.
Yeah, you haven't done anything to earn that.
I might hear. We're going to find out together. So, something I have noticed this week is players walking back what they've said previously. Couple examples of this. Let's start with Josh Jacobs. He joined Pro Football Talk with Mike Florio and a couple of other co-hosts at the Super Bowl back in February or late January, whenever that was, early Super Bowl this year. He joined them to talk about the Packers' lack of number one wide receiver. Here is what Josh Jacobs said at the Super Bowl a couple of months back.
And then I think we need a wide receiver here, a real wide receiver.
Miles Garrett, number one.
Will be here later.
Yeah, like I love the guys that we have in the receiving room. They all have potential to be one, right. But we need a guy that's proven to be one.
So there's Josh Jacobs saying they need a true number one receiver. And you could tell he did not mean that from draft one in the first round. He meant that from go sign somebody that's proven it, right? He used the word proven. And also saying a real wide receiver is a crazy accidental jab by him.
Yeah.
Very funny.
I think he'd walk that back given the opportunity.
Well, Josh Jacobs, we played this audio earlier in the week, joined WFRV in Green Bay over the weekend, said this.
We got a deep wide receiver room. You know, a lot of those guys have a lot of ability. And it's just about doing it at a consistent level and doing it at the highest level possible, which I feel like a lot of them will. You can see them come in this year. It's just different. The energy is different. The way that they look, the way that they run their routes, everything is different. So it's going to be fun.
Not a full walk it back by Josh Jacobs. More a, hey, my opinion has changed from Josh Jacobs in that context. But not the only example of saying something and then saying, well, I actually didn't really mean that when I said that a couple months ago. Keyshawn Nixon at locker cleanout after the playoff loss to the Philadelphia Eagles pretty much said, I'm a corner. I want to be treated like a corner.
CB1.
I want to be CB1, which he self-proclaimed that at one point. And pretty much said, despite being a back-to-back all-pro selection, a kick returner, I do not want to return kicks anymore after fumbling the opening kickoff in that wild card loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. Keyshawn Nixon, asked about returning kicks yesterday at OTAs, said this.
I was kind of frustrated when the season was over. You know, it's value always, especially when it comes to me being who I am when doing it. So, I'm open to it. I'm always going to do what the team needs.
I'm always going to do what the team needs. Says Keyshawn Nixon. So in my mind, Joshy, I don't think this was just a self-change of opinion by both of these guys.
Nope.
I imagine there was a conversation had.
Multiple, now, probably.
The problem I am having is figuring out who the conversation was with. So it could be with Brian Gutekunst. It could be with Matt LaFleur. It could be with the PR staff. It could be with a ton of different people. But it's not so much who the conversation was had with, it was more so, what was the conversation is where my mind goes. And I imagine you, being the brilliant brain you are, have an idea of how that conversation went. So in this context, I would like you to be whoever is facilitating the conversation, and I will be Keyshawn Nixon in this context.
Okay. So you want me, we're only doing Keyshawn's end here, and I'm the person speaking to Keyshawn.
You got it.
Okay. So I envision, I don't think this is a Goody conversation because from what we've heard, and Jason and Rob have kind of let us know that he's a little detached from the players. I don't know how much he's actively speaking to players day to day, aside from like literally contract negotiations, which are filtered oftentimes directly through the agent, and then they have come together sort of meetings. Mm-hmm. I believe this is either Matt LaFleur or Jeff Hafley.
Okay.
And I would envision the conversation started with, So, you had some things to say about returning kicks for the team. Do you care to elaborate your feelings on why you said what you said at locker cleanout?
I do not like the new kickoff rules, and I don't think I can be as potent at that position. I also think my value is higher as CB1 on this defense.
Now, you realize, Keyshawn, we're at a time now where Jair's future here is uncertain.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you have an opportunity here to earn yourself a lot more money if you are to go out and ball out, like I think you are able to doing. There is a potential for you to earn a lot of money.
Yeah.
But being insubordinate and behaving like Jair might make the Packers and other teams a little more hesitant to offer you that big CB1 money, which I think you would be deserving of if you go out and continue to prove it. It was just your first season in that role. Let's remember where you've come from. You've been excellent. You came in from a guy from a pack practice squad. I think you were on the roster. You were returning kicks for Rich Bisaccia.
You don't even know my background, coach?
I was actually confusing you with Rasul Douglas. Delete that part. You came from Rich Bisaccia, where you, frankly, were a special teamers only. You weren't even returning kicks with Rich. Then you came here and you earned the opportunity. You played excellent. You earned All-Pro honors. Mm-hmm. And through earning that opportunity, you earned more playing time in the defensive backfield. You were a part-time player, started in the slot. Then you moved with your play and your level of commitment to the team to being multi-use. You turned into cornerback one.
Yeah, here I am.
But the job isn't done.
But listen here, coach. That's because I'm a dog, and I think I'm a dog on defense. I think you got other guys that can be dogs in this new kick return role.
We don't pay dogs. We pay performers. We pay guys who show up every Sunday, who do what the team needs to do, and helps us elevate our program, be it in the weight room, be it on special teams, be it in practice, be it in games. The way to earn yourself the most amount of money, to continue to grow your career, and to become potentially one of the Packers legends. Would be to go out there and do what is expected of you and what's asked of you and do it to the best of your ability. Because every step of the line so far in your career at Green Bay, you've exceeded expectations.
And I'm going to continue to do that, coach.
Until you earn and you prove yourself as a CB1, we can have that conversation.
All right, coach. I'm going to do what's best for the team.
Thank you.
That was really good.
Thanks, Will. I think we should role play more often.
More so, Josh might be applying for GM spots. That was really good.
Josh could be a coach.
I started to think that was real for a second.
Thought I was actually Keyshawn Nixon?
Yeah.
I look a lot like him.
You did a really good job role playing him, too.
You did. Interjects, I'm a dog. Which I imagine he says. He is a dog. Let's be fair.
He is a dog.
I was purposely playing on the... Because it's pretty clear to me Matt LaFleur... With many of the players.
Just quick for our audio listeners, I don't think you could appreciate the Josh hand motions that were just made. He just like flailed his arms like he was a baby.
I was trying to say, for all of the players, Matt LaFleur clearly has taken the role of I'm on your side.
Yep.
And that seems to be his approach, and I think it's a good approach. I think that's what helped him with Aaron Rodgers, Devontae, all of that stuff. It was mainly, unless you give him a reason to not be on your side, he defaults to on your side.
Mm-hmm.
And he also realizes there's different degrees of guys whose side I should be on. Zach Tom, for instance. He's clearly planted his flag. Now, I don't think that's going to cause him and Goody to get in like screaming matches.
I would agree.
I think he's going to voice his opinion. But I think everyone understands. You are the player's coach. And you are the one that's going to advocate for them. And you advocate for guys who earn it. So you compliment them. You tell them. And nothing I said was inaccurate about Keyshawn. Like, I think that's a very good way to approach it. Like, hey, man, 2-3 years ago, it was unlikely you'd still be in the NFL.
And here we are.
And here we are on the cusp of you becoming, like, a guy who's going to be sought after if you reach free agency. But what you won't be sought after for is, I'm not returning kicks. I'm above that.
Yeah, can't be above it. Although, can we just be honest for a minute?
Yes.
Savion Williams returning kicks would be kind of fun.
I think he'll be on, I think because they have that where they do it, sort of, they have two guys back there because of the new. I think he'll be back there, and I think it'll kind of be ride the hot hand.
If
the ball goes to Savion and he has a big return, he'll get it. If Keyshawn has a good couple of weeks, he'll get it.
I also just must point out real quick, I've never felt more definite that Mecole Hardman will not make the roster. That looked like for a quick minute he would be okay. Maybe, you know, if Keyshawn isn't returning kicks or punts, then sure, you know, maybe Mecole Hardman can make the roster. It is a foregone conclusion he's not making the roster.
It seemed via the draft, it even seemed like the Packers went out of their way to ensure there was going there wasn't going to be a need for Mecole Hardman, and not even.
But do you know what's irritating about that? Goody's going to be able to go, yeah, this is why I don't side veterans. Right here, man.
I think that was a CYA.
CYA.
Cover your ass.
Oh, I was going to try to figure that,
out. That was in the event we don't get the type of guys or the guys specifically we're looking for.
We've got a guy that can do
We've got something. Yeah. Like, you don't want to end up in a situation where you sign Tyler Irvin in the middle of the season and he's like the savior to the year. Remember that?
That's a name I...
He took them from one of the worst to like league average, and it was massive improvement, and it was noticeable week to week.
That's right.
I think they learned from that mistake.
That's awesome. That's the first time I've heard that name in a long time. That was exciting. I enjoyed that. Okay, plenty of OTAs talk here to kick off, Mr. Relevant, on your fine Wednesday. So mandatory minicamp. What's the? They don't put on pads for that, right?
I don't know. I would need to. I have such a hard time keeping this all together.
I do too.
Where there's like seemingly always something going on. And I mean, now it's dictated by the CBA.
Right.
I think had many of the coaches had their druthers, they'd already be in.
I mean, did you hear what he just said, Will?
I heard him use the word druthers.
Is that on your list?
No, but it is now. And also, they do not wear full pads during mandatory minicamp. Doesn't start.
Do they do shells or whatever they call it?
It says they may wear helmets, and full contact practices and full pads are prohibited until training camp.
Got it. There you go.
So, yeah, a lot of that's dictated by the CBA. I know, like, in training camp, they'll do full. You're in your full uniform. And then they'll do shells, which is helmet and shoulder pads.
With shorts.
And then you do, like, I forget what they call it. It's like bang or something, where you, like, hit and wrap up but don't take anyone to the ground.
It's like bang or something.
There's a term for it, like...
I think we should stick with bang.
Yeah, banging.
Just out there banging.
Uh-huh.
I love when the guys get out there and they're banging.
Back in football practice, when we used to have like lighter practices and we knew
when you played?
Yes.
Okay.
It was smart to angle your pads down because that's where the clapping and the noise comes from. So you could make it sound like you were delivering hits while not actually delivering hits.
So you cheated the system.
We all did. It was very much a we look at each other and go, yeah, let's cheat
the system a little bit.
Right. We don't want to. He's taking it easy on us. Let's not give him a reason to not take it easy on us today.
There's always that one guy, though, that's going in like head first.
Yes, correct.
Just trying to give everybody a concussion.
I could name you him by name, but I don't think he deserves that. I don't know where his life is at this moment, and I don't think he needs to be called out.
That's fair. I wouldn't argue with that.
But everyone knows that guy.
Respect to that guy, though.
Try hard.
Not really, yeah. Gym class hero. Yeah. Football team hero.
The guy who thinks he should be delivering the speech and then it goes nowhere and everyone kind of looks around like, okay,
great. I'd play more, but coach doesn't like me. Yeah.
I always found the pregame speech awkward.
It's never once gotten me hyped up.
As somebody that likes to talk, I was never the one delivering it. Now, partially because I was never a very good athlete.
That it is... Yeah, it's pretty atypical for, like, not one of the best players to do that.
Right.
But oftentimes the people put into those roles are physically gifted and not mentally gifted.
It's well said. We got to go out there and we got to show them that we're the best.
Dude,
we're 4-12. We're not the best.
I see some where I go, had I been on this team or in that event, that would have gotten me fired up. But I never received a speech like that.
Did you ever see the one of the little kid firing up his flag football team?
Or you mean the one where he's blaming his coaches?
He was like tiny kid, like 6, 7 years old.
Yeah, and he was saying it's the coach's fault.
Oh,
and
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's a football team. And he's holding his pads with his helmet through him in the classic. And he's saying, it's not on us. It's on the coaches.
He's right.
I guess.
I think he's right. Okay.
I have my doubts.
Let's get to this. Each and every Wednesday, Will Summers provides us with, well, I don't want to say beautiful things, but I want to say they're creative, that's for sure. Will does his best Chris Berman impression and gives us the fastest 2 minutes of the week that was on a Wednesday. Wednesday to Wednesday, the normal way of measuring a week, we've determined on the show. It's time now for Will Summers' Week in Review. Oh, wow.
Yeah, some Sunday night baseball theme because the Brewers have been hot. Let's talk about the Brewers. They took on the Phillies for a 3-game series in Philly over the weekend. And while normally it's known as the city of brotherly love, it looked more like the city of brotherly shove as Quinn Priester looked like the Philadelphia Eagles on a 4th-and-1 from the opponent's 23-yard line as he shoved for 6 innings out of the bullpen, allowing 4 hits and 2 earned runs en route to a 6-2 win Friday to open up the series. On Saturday, it was an offensive explosion as Alan Jackson Churio went down yonder on the Chattahoochee, going 4-for-5 with a home run and 5 RBIs. Reese Witherspoon Hoskins looked legally bonds as he blasted 2 home runs and tallied 6 RBIs against his former team in a 17-7 win in Game 2.
That's good.
Looking for the sweep on Sunday, the Brewers found themselves trailing 2-1 in the 7th inning when Caleb Durbin scored on an error. Then, Jake from State Farm Bowers didn't even need to get his khakis dirty as he blasted a 2-RBI stand-up double to put the crew ahead for good as they swept the NL East leading Phillies. While widely regarded as the Brewers' star player, Christian Yelich has had a slow start to the season. There's no denying that. But recently, he's been scratching that yell itch to play like an all-star as he won NL Player of the Week after going 10-for-20 with 3 homers, 9 RBIs, a double, a walk, 5 runs scored, and a 1,000 slugging percentage across 5 games that included his first career walk-off home run on Tuesday against the Red Sox, a grand slam for good measure, and had the game-winning 2-run homer on Saturday in Philadelphia. And he also had the game-winning home run on Monday as the Brewers extended the win streak to 8 before losing to dramatic fashion to the Reds last night as TJ Friedl robbed Jake Bowers of a game-tying 2-run home run in the 9th.
What happened to your music?
It was only 1:30 long. I didn't think I'd go longer than that. I was trying to go fast. With your Mr. Irrelevant Weekend Recap, I'm Will Summers.
All right, pretty good. I would have been extra impressed had you included something from the game that's happening right now as Jackson Churio hit another home run. Brewers lead 3-1 in the top of the 6th inning at Cincinnati.
Looking for their 13th straight series win against the Reds, by the way.
Yeah, so I saw before the series started, and now they're 1-1 in the last 2 against them. They were like 45-15 over the last 60 or something like that.
Yeah. The Reds have taken over for the Pirates, which not long ago, the Brewers had like all-time historic win-loss record against the Pirates. Like they won consecutive series and were winning like the amount of games against the Pirates. This was probably like 2016-17, that era, where it was like not just for the Brewers, it was for MLB at large, like taking advantage of, they seem to do this where they just find a team and they just absolutely pick on them and just continue to dominate.
And that's become the Reds.
Well, speaking of the Brewers real quickly,
yeah, go ahead.
Did you hear that Keston Hiro's back in the majors?
Really? For who?
Think about it. Who would call up a guy?
Colorado?
You got it. The Colorado Rockies. He's continuing to mash in AAA, as we've seen him do.
Yeah, he's done that for years, yes.
And I hope for the best for him, but I think he's the old quadruple A player. Yeah. Too good for AAA, not good enough for the MLB.
Yeah, correct.
Rockies have won 2 straight, though.
I did see
streaking.
That. Not yet. Not yet. Need one more before you're streaking. Can't even give it to them, despite how bad they are. They are, what is their record now, 11-50? That would make them if they've won 2 in a row?
Yeah, I know they have 11 wins for sure. I'm not sure about the losses.
They are going for a sweep on the Marlins, and right now they lead 3-1 in the bottom of the 7th.
Wow.
They're like historically bad, and they still might sweep the Marlins. That's so cool. The Marlins have never really been good, have they? Outside of, I mean, way back when they made the World Series, which was what, year 2000?
Yes, in the Miguel Cabrera.
Oh, then it was later than 2000.
Era. Well, he was like 19.
Okay.
Then
maybe it was 2000.
They won two there, and then were awful all the other times.
Yeah, they've just been all, just as long as I've watched baseball, I feel like
yes,
they've
been the
awful.
Marlins have been one of the more pathetic in all of sports franchises.
Fair, yeah, fair,
yeah. Remember when they thought they built that new stadium and they put that home run statue?
Yep.
And then a pool. They're like, yeah, we got to get people out here. Didn't work. Not so much.
When they rebranded from the Florida Marlins. Yes. Didn't work.
Great hat. The original black with the blue Marlin. Yes. All time.
Baseball has some great logos.
The vest uniforms, too. They had like the white pinstripes.
Yep.
With the black sleeves.
With Pudge.
Yeah. Pudge.
Those uniforms need to come back. Like the vest style.
I don't know.
Is Colorado still doing the vest?
No.
I don't watch much Colorado.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Although, Keston Hira might need to flip it on one of these nights. Brewers have been really fun, right? As Will mentioned, they went on a season-long 8-game winning streak, which included a couple of sweeps over the Red Sox and the Phillies. Lost yesterday, as Will pointed out, on what almost was a game-tying home run in the ninth inning that was robbed for the final out of the game against the Cincinnati Reds. But this is a team that, I mean, it feels like we're getting a little bit back to last year's form, which is finding unique ways to win, and the bats have been consistent, right? I mean, I saw Matt Hamilton from Jim Matt Molly on ESPN Madison threw out a stat of sorts of like, you know, they were shut out however many times, you know, prior to 2.5 weeks ago, and they haven't been shut out since. They've scored over 100 runs in the last 15 games. It's been, why are you giving me a confused face?
So they replaced the computer in here. Does that keep going off on you?
That might be what that is. It might be my laptop. I don't know.
I keep hearing it, and I'm annoyed by it because they replaced it, and they were bugging me.
Yeah, all the bookmarks were gone. I noticed that right before the show.
Thank you for fixing whatever was wrong, but
I don't know what was wrong, though.
I don't either.
Okay, glad we're on the same page. So Brewers in a fun spot, though. In a fun spot. And Chef Ed just chimed in 5-1 crew. I missed what happened, but something good happened. As Daz Cameron hit a home run to center field and Rhys Hoskins was on, make that 5-1 in the top of the sixth with two outs for the Milwaukee Brewers as they look to get another series win over the Cincinnati Reds. I'm not confident they're a playoff team, but I am confident that they are going to be a fun team that will be in the mix down the stretch here as they begin to turn things around.
I said it on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. It gives you hope.
Yeah,
they can play good enough to be a playoff team and to be competitive. Because for a while there, with the literally inability to score runs, like zero of them, it really made you start to worry about where can this season go. Now the proof of concept is there. You rattle off 8 in a row. Mm-hmm. You beat good teams. Mm-hmm. So I think it's both good for the team's confidence and the fans.
Yeah,
it gives you incentive. Because let's be honest here, I'm not speaking for everyone, but when it comes to baseball, you need a reason to watch. It's not like the Packers. You don't flick on every single game religiously. There's a lot of games, and you can get discouraged quick because bad baseball is amongst the worst things to watch in all sports. Not scoring runs is tough. So it gives you a reason to say, hey, I'm going to continue to watch this. I'm going to continue to believe there's some hope here. And I'm going to continue to think maybe as the pitching staff gets more and more healthy, some of the guys we know to be excellent, who Christian Yelich is still red hot, still playing well.
Yep.
You think, hey, there is brighter days ahead potentially. Even like there's no reason to count them out of a playoff team right now.
Other than the records in the NL, but yes, I agree.
I mean, they're only 6.5 games behind the Cubs. Right.
Which means you're plenty in striking distance, and you have a series coming up, I think, later this month against the Cubs.
I'll admit this about myself. I was on not paying attention alert in terms of my personal life. Obviously, through work, we are going to be talking about them and watching them. But like, it was going to be one of the, I'm obligated to do this. I don't
want to do this.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But just like that, George Webb starts dangling free burgers in front of your eyes and people go, wait a minute. I'm all of a sudden I'm back. But no, they're playing a fun brand of baseball again, which is what was lacking at the beginning of the season. And we saw it right away from that opening series against the Yankees. They weren't playing good baseball, or fun baseball, I should say, where the offense wasn't doing much. The pitching we knew would be problematic, and now it takes another hit last night as Brandon Woodruff in a rehab start catches what do they call it, Willie?
Comebacker,
thank you. To the elbow.
106.
Yeah, not a slow baseball.
I'm concerned with even what a fully healthy Brandon Woodruff's going to look like.
I think that's a fair thing to say.
I'm concerned about velocity. And you can get away with that in the lower levels. I'm concerned about what it would be like. Obviously, he keeps having things pop up. I don't know how bad this oblique injury was, or if this was a I need more time thing that delayed him coming back. But taking a 106 to the elbow certainly ain't going to help things.
Notice
unless that. We're thinking rookie of the year scenario here.
Like the movie? I know what you're talking about, where he gets the freak injury and then he gets the gear put into his arm and then just has a super arm.
You've never seen Rookie? Jeez.
Nah, I got nothing here.
That's made for guys like you to watch.
Maybe I'll watch it. Then.
He comes back and he's throwing gas.
It's made for guys like me?
Well, Dreamers. I'm including myself in that. It's for kids who like sports and would watch a sports movie and be able to be like, what if I somehow suffered an injury that made me throw 100 miles per hour and then I ended up on the Cubs?
Yeah, because the guy's like 16. Yeah. Henry Rowan Gardner.
And he's 16 and playing for the Cubs?
Yeah.
He's probably younger than 16 in the movie.
Unhittable.
It's a dumb concept. I love it. All right, One Word Wednesday time. Will's got topics. Joshy and I have answers. I am actually very intrigued on where this is going to go here on One Word Wednesday, Joshy. Because I know Will got into his bag a little bit. He was asking me if stuff was off limits. We're going to find out together. Will Summers, One Word Wednesday.
Yeah, let's get the obvious ones out of the way first. The Oilers and the Panthers face off in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. A rematch of last year's series that went to 7 games. A Canadian team has not won the Stanley Cup since 1993.
And my words, McDavid. The Oilers have the best player. I'm rooting for the Oilers. But I actually watched quite a bit of this series last year, believe it or not.
Puck guy.
Sometimes. I watched a lot of the first round of the playoffs this year. Haven't watched since. But I will flip this on when it's on because it's also alternating days of NBA Finals, which means it's just good, at the very least, background noise. So I'm rooting for the Oilers. I'm rooting for Connor McDavid. It'd be awesome to see him win the Stanley Cup. So my word is McDavid.
I mean, it should be Canada because it's been so long since a Canadian team has won a Stanley Cup. I also want to say Mick overrated. That was a term coined by Greg Cody of the Miami Herald that caused nearly a damn international incident. It is wrong. Connor McDavid is absolutely excellent. He is literally only really comparable in modern time to like Wayne Gretzky, which is remarkable to say and seems like an exaggeration, but it's not. The way he's been able to produce. I sort of like the Florida Panthers just because I like the idea of a Florida team. And having the thing over Canada of you guys can't win your own damn sport kind of makes me want to root for the Florida Panthers.
I understand why you would say that. Now, I'm going to offer you a challenge right now. You're a smart guy. I trust you. I'm going to offer you $1 for every word after O Canada in the Canadian national anthem that you can recite in a row without fail.
Well, I don't know how it starts after O Canada, so...
$0. Well, same offer.
Is the word how the first word?
It's O Canada.
After O Canada is the first word how.
No, it is not. It's our. Our home and native land. I thought $5 might be.
I haven't heard many Canadian anthems. I've heard a couple at Blackhawks games I've gone to.
Yeah, yeah.
But I certainly don't take note of it.
Okay. Fair enough. We're just going
to
see.
Play it, I could probably then sing along to portions of it. But yeah, right out the gate, I got nothing.
All right, that's okay.
Know the tune. I could hum it.
That doesn't help.
Yeah.
One more quick thing on McDavid. He's only 28 years old.
Correct. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like the hockey where you start in the NHL at 18 years old, that's wild.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hockey's just crazy because these guys, you know, like the USHL, which is a very popular league here in Wisconsin, right? The Madison Capitals, the Green Bay Gamblers, two of the teams in that league. Those are like 15 and 16 year olds that skipped high school to pursue hockey.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre sport.
It's crazier in Canada.
Oh, like I know.
Yeah. Those kids are instantly basically put into farms to become hockey players. Yeah. And
two Wisconsin cities have just found a way to monetize it.
Yes. And
that's as simple as it is.
The thought that McDavid's played 10 years and is not even halfway done with it. Yeah, and his career is wild.
Well, I mean, some of the stories are really cool too about how the young kid Cole Caulfield.
Yeah,
he was playing in the Frozen Four with the Badgers, but mm-hmm. had been drafted prior. So he went from, I believe, playing in the national championship to then playing in the NHL within like a matter of weeks.
Yep,
which is unbelievable. Imagine trying to keep your cool.
Yeah, Cole Caulfield. So Stevens Point, surprisingly, like a hockey hotbed.
Yes.
So Joe Pavelski grew up in Plover, mm-hmm. which is just outside of Stevens Point, and then Cole Caulfield grew up in Stevens Point. Those are the only two NHL players from Wisconsin I can name off the top of my head, and they both just so happen to have Stevens Point ties.
There are many, many, many more.
Right. I mean, like I know Barry Richter, the son of Pat.
Yes,
Richter,
and then the family. Danny Heatley, I believe, went to Madison, but I believe he's Canadian.
Okay.
So there's a lot of kids that run through Wisconsin hockey that have gone on to do great things. Justin Schultz, I believe, was a kid from Wisconsin.
Sounds like a kid from Wisconsin.
The coach.
John Cooper.
No.
Well, John Cooper was the head coach of the Green Bay Gamblers, so I knew that. He's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I'm going to feel really dumb when I do this.
All right, that's hockey talk. That's enough of that. Keep going.
Some good hockey talk. All right, tomorrow night, the Indiana Pacers will face off against the
Gary Suter, the Suter family. Yeah, Suter there family. There it is. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. the Pacers will take on the Thunder in game one of the NBA Finals. The Thunder have won NBA championship when they were the Seattle Supersonics in 1979, and the Pacers have never won the NBA championship.
Loud is my word.
I'm going to be honest, I wasn't listening because I was looking at all the Wisconsin hockey players. Mark Johnson.
He was on the Miracle team.
Tony Granato.
He's the head coach of the women's hockey team now at Wisconsin. Tony Granato.
Uh-huh. Adam Burrish.
Yep. Chris Chelios. I think he's from Wisconsin.
I believe he went to Wisconsin.
He did go to Wisconsin. I guess I don't know if he's from there.
Yeah, he's not here.
My word is...
Phil Kessel.
My word is loud, and I don't want you to repeat what the topic was.
Mine is quiet.
Okay, my acronym is MVP.
Mine is LVP. I imagine if I'm going to try and guess here. Loud and MVP.
I mean, it shouldn't be that hard.
I'm thinking we're talking about the NBA playoffs. The first game is happening tonight?
Tomorrow.
Past that, I don't know.
Do you know where that's happening?
I would imagine it's in OKC.
Why is that?
Because they have the best record in the NBA.
Okay. Did what I say have anything to do with that?
That it's going to be loud in there.
Why is it going to be loud in there?
Because they're playing at home.
But why else? We've been over this.
It's their first.
No. No. What's the nickname of Oklahoma City?
I'm not playing this game anymore.
Loud City. Welcome to loudcity.com. RIP, by the way. It's dead. All right, go on.
All right, this one's just for Josh.
Uh-oh.
It's concert day. Me and Alex Stroff are attending a concert together tonight.
Bring earplugs.
Why?
Because the music sucks.
What's the point of going then?
Beers. What's the point of going to concerts if you're not going to have beers?
The music?
Nah. That's secondary.
Is it?
No, it's not. Yeah, I mean, Stroff is going to tell you a lot of fun facts you could care less about during the concert.
I just do that in general. Yeah. It's just kind of my general existence.
But you're going to feel extra obligated to do
Here's
it.
Here's the thing.
Because
he's right.
Is he going to make me buy a t-shirt for the band or something?
No. If you want to, go for it. But I won't make you do anything. He's right about that. Keep going. I want to see how much else you nail.
I imagine he's probably going to want to stand closer to the stage than you're comfortable with.
No, I'm tall. I usually fall back, yeah.
Speak for yourself.
It's true. You are short. We'll figure it out.
I don't know what else to say because I don't know much about this band other than Strove telling us over and over and over again about him meeting a C-list, probably D-list celebrity in the lead singer and how cool it was.
Okay, that's not how I've ever described
it's
that.
Going to it's you're gonna think you are walking through Target with the sound of the music you're hearing. It's the music you hear in department stores.
I did discover this band.
At Lids.
At Lids, yes. That's correct. Like their sound, though. Bad Sons, for any of you curious.
Have beers before it.
We are.
Don't no. Worry. I'm telling him, before hanging out with you and listening to the music, have beers.
Well, we are having beers before we go to the concert.
Have beers before that.
You're telling me to pregame the pregame.
Yes,
that's exactly what he's telling
you.
Okay, got it. All right, any more, Will?
We have one just for you, Strove.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. On Monday, I will be touring Josh DiMaggio's old apartment.
Same. Now, hold on a minute. Not same as in I am also touring his apartment. As we know, I just moved. Will, you don't know this story. You didn't tell him, did you?
No.
So when I was offered my full-time job in Madison, that is as Josh was leaving Madison. And he lived in an apartment
building. I had already left.
Yes, but you still had your lease, I believe.
Yes. So I had stuff there, but I was sleeping on Pratik Patel, who you're going to hang out with this weekend, floor on an air mattress at the time.
Okay. Got it. Uh-huh. Joshy lived in an apartment in downtown Madison near the Capitol.
Constellation?
Yes, that's exactly what it's called. Constellation. And I saw it and it was a studio apartment and that was about all I could afford. So I was looking into it and, ended up being a little bit out of my price range. And, but anyway, I go on the tour and they walk me into this apartment in the building that I knew Josh formerly had lived in. Walked in and, you know, there's like a little area for the bed and the bed's a mess. Mm-hmm. And then we get into the living room kitchen area. Sitting on the living room coffee table is multiple books about the Grateful Dead. And then I look to my right, and on the kitchen counter, there's a cup with a giant logo in the middle that reads ESPN Milwaukee. And I said, holy bleep, I'm in Josh DiMaggio's apartment right
now. I thought
now.
You were going to say you walked in and he was sitting on the couch.
No, he was in Milwaukee at that point. And I just started touring apartments. That's exactly what happened. So anyway, to your point, I have toured an apartment that Josh DiMaggio lived in. You are touring the apartment literally that he lived in or the building?
The literal apartment.
So this is a place I lived in almost 10 years ago
now.
Oh,
wow.
So this is the house I moved out of to move to Madison.
This is strange.
Yes. Young Will was talking to me and asking me about areas to live near Brady Street. So I popped on the old Zillow and was giving him advice and kind of telling him where and where not to live. Mainly I was focused on here's places that are going to be exceptionally difficult to park at.
Sure.
It's going to be a headache. There's a lot of apartments over there, so there's a lot of cars parked there. And I said, actually, the road I live on, while busy, is pretty good because it's far enough away. It's about 3 blocks
away. So how do we discover that the apartment you used to live in is up for rent?
I was on Zillow, and I said, huh, that's my old apartment on Warren Avenue.
And you liked it?
I liked it. It's perfect for a 22-year-old.
And that's what Will is.
Yes. It's relatively cheap considering surrounding prices.
Sure.
And I had a good time living there. It's everything two kids in their 20s would need. It's nice enough where you wouldn't be like, this place is gross. Stuff's falling off the walls. Now, I don't know the current state, but from the pictures, it looked carbon copy the same. All they did was update the shower.
All right.
So, interestingly enough, I moved in there from people I knew before that. So, my friends had lived in this place for a period of like 6 years.
Oh, wow.
I lived there multiple years. They lived there multiple years. And now, young Will might live there.
It's a legacy building.
It is a legacy. Without it, a legacy will end up being my word here. Wow. Good luck. What day are you doing that?
Monday.
Okay. And you will have a roommate?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Will, there's a room straight ahead when you walk from the kitchen to the living room. That's the big one. That's the one I had. That's the one you want.
Okay.
The one off to the side, a little awkward, a little long and skinny. We don't want that one.
Noted.
Yeah. So if you got to lay claim laterally.
Here's the thing. Do you want to live in an apartment that Josh previously lived in?
I mean, Why wouldn't I? I mean, if it's a good spot.
Because something about Josh is he loves being the foremost expert. Right? It's just something.
Well, says the NBA guy.
Yeah, he's going to be like, does the water spout still make that weird noise?
Right, right.
You're trying to fix it.
Does the toilet still run at night?
No, that one doesn't.
Sometimes you got to kick the AC.
Right. It, like,
window ACs, you're going to need those.
I think he would love it, though.
Yeah. I would love to go there and have some beers there.
Do you want to go there?
Yeah.
Okay, I think you should move in there.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I would love to stop by and just sit on that couch and have some brewskis.
I just think if you have an issue, right, you come into work one day, as people do, right, Josh, the three of us are good pals, right? Like, if I've got something on my mind, I feel comfortable getting it off my chest with you guys. I feel like there is a day in the near future that would come, and Will walks in and goes, damn it, man, like, this toilet just won't flush. And Josh goes, oh, just, well, the landlord, Mark, he's the nicest guy. Just give him a ring.
Unfortunately, the old landlord, whose name was Costa, sold it.
Recently.
So
it would, landlord.
It would be a different person. There was nothing that happened there related to the house and its upkeep. There was no, like, oh, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. I found multiple times somebody sleeping in our little vestibule.
Oh,
Because that is screened in, and then there's the locked door.
Sure.
One time was an unhoused person. One time was a drunk person who thought he was, at his friend's house, but he was not.
Oh, geez.
So I woke him up, and I said, "Hey, what are you doing?" He said, "I'm looking for X, Y, and Z." And I said,
"Not here.
Doesn't live here." And he said, "Well, can you help me get there?" And I said, "Well, where does he live?" And he said, "I don't know."
I said, how can I help?
Right. I said, where are you from? He said, Colorado. And I said, you're far from there currently. But I ended up calling his friend and getting him an Uber while this guy was intoxicated to go to his friend's house. I've put him in the Uber. Hope the best.
How'd you
him.
Call his friend?
He opened his phone and told me the name of the person he was visiting.
Goodness
so
gracious.
Then I went into his phone, called that person, who picked up pretty quickly, probably because they were looking for their friend. That, I mean, this was like 6 a.m. I was going,
oh, wow.
I was going to do something. Like, I had to be up early and leaving. So this was all very early in the morning that I ran into this person.
Good Lord. You have an interesting life, man.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I also found somebody sleeping on the cellar doors there. Because I think we had some people
well,
over.
Well, you can't deal with all this.
It sounds like he's telling good stories.
Nothing went wrong. There was no security issues. It's fairly quiet for being so close to Brady where you're two-block walk.
Other than the drunk people that are sleeping on your porch.
Sometimes that's what's that. I mean, that's living on the east side.
You don't
think
Josh has ended up on someone's porch before?
I don't. No.
I have not.
I don't.
I've had many, many, many friends end up in similar scenarios. I have not.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I get to where I need to go.
That's high.
Earlier today, the words hierarchy of needs were used in a meeting that we had here. How much did that resonate with you guys or go over both of your heads?
Say that one more time.
The hierarchy of needs, I believe it's Maslow.
Yeah, Jonathan Maslow. I've heard of that.
And
in psychology.
Hierarchy of what?
Hierarchy of needs.
Needs. Oh, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I figured.
I don't read Pavlov's dog research.
Not the same guy.
It's going to be like, hey, Will, so, you know, I partied way harder in that apartment than you did.
Oh, for sure.
See what I mean?
Duh.
Are you going to want to deal with that?
I don't know if I can beat him. I don't think anyone can. Just kind of got to deal with that.
That's true. He is a legend. All right. It's time now for what we learned, because you learned something new every day. It's presented by Door County Distillery, locally produced, handcrafted. Award-winning spirits made locally in beautiful Door County. We're coming up next Friday, June 13th. Joshy, myself, Hunter, will all be live in Door County at Door County Distillery for a special two-hour edition of Mr. Irrelevant beginning at noon next Friday, June 13th. Their spirits are the best. Will, you know what we're drinking tonight? Little Door County Distillery, baby. Whether it's the whiskey, the brandy, the rums, the gins, any of the in-betweens. Elevate it, man. Elevate whatever you're doing. Your tailgate, your party, graduation parties. Father's Day is coming up. Elevate it with Door County Distillery. Visit their website, doorcountydistillery.com. All right, I saw this story. I thought about hanging on to it until story swap on Friday. Couldn't do it. Have to bring it up to Josh now. Josh, you are, I think you would agree, you're easily irritable.
I would disagree.
Okay, let me rephrase. You're easily irritable when it comes to stupidity.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I read this story on the New York Post. This is the headline. We did our gender reveal at 30,000 feet with complete strangers. It was the best decision of our lives. A couple, a 24-year-old woman and a 27-year-old man, hosted their celebration, attended by complete strangers, to toast their incoming infant during a flight to Paris, France. They interrupted the flight, cut into a cake, which was blue. They're having a son. They involved all of the passengers by giving them all blue and pink sheets in which they could hold up and guess the gender of strangers' babies. And it interrupted this entire flight to Paris. Number one, irritating, irresponsible, annoying. Number two, why did the flight allow this? Yeah. Why did they allow them to do this? And number three, keep your sex life to yourself, please. Congratulations. You know what? Happy life, building a family, all great stuff. I don't need to hear about it as I'm heading to Paris. It's none of my business.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that get under my skin. But the forced involvement of a literal captive audience, short of strapping on a parachute, pulling the emergency exit and jumping out, these people had no choice whether to participate in this celebration and gender reveal. How are you so needy for attention and gratification from complete strangers that you decide, you know what, I'm not going to spend this with my family. I'm going to involve these people who I will never see again.
Right. As I assume they're headed on, I believe the new term now is baby moon. Right? You have your honeymoon, and then when you get pregnant, you go on a baby moon. I would assume they're going on their baby moon to Paris, and they decided, hey, let's find out if we're having a boy or a girl with strangers above an ocean. Sounds like fun.
I don't say this often when it comes to people, but I hate these people. I hate them, and I think they should be put on the no-fly list for such uncouth behavior. It's preposterous to be like, you know what? Let's get all these people involved in my I don't care about your child gender reveal. I don't want anything to do with this. If you would have handed me that card, I would have thrown it on the floor.
As somebody that gets a little bit freaked out on flights too, I don't know how I'd feel flying over a big body of water on a long flight to Paris if there was that much of a commotion.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You think it's going to knock it out of the air?
Well, I'm like a person, I got my headphones in, so if I just see a bunch of people standing up and celebrating, like, what the hell's going on?
We made it over the ocean.
Freak me out a little bit.
All right, before we wrap up the show, the new bit we've been doing. Will, words that Joshy has said that you don't understand. I imagine uncouth may have made that list as well.
I did not write that one down, but I can... I'm sure he can explain that one to us. So I have druthers on here. Druthers is an American English idiom, specifically a dialect variant of would rather, used to express a preference or choice.
I don't know if I knew that one either.
Fun fact, you learned something new.
It's what the segment's called.
And then we have vestibule, a small enclosed space or area typically located at the entrance of a building or room.
Some people would call it like maybe a mudroom.
A lobby.
Yeah.
I've called it a mudroom.
In like a public standpoint.
Yeah. I think vestibule is most often referred to in like older houses because they often had, when you were doing manual labor, you needed somewhere to take off your boots, your clothes. That's why the Pittsburgh potty became a thing. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
The Pittsburgh potty is a lot of houses have a... Sometimes it's in the same small space, but it is a bathroom and a shower for the people who were doing work in
steelwork
industry or foundries who would be able to go straight through their cellar door.
Oh.
Take their clothes off, shower,
and then they're clean.
Go upstairs clean.
Wow.
So if you ever at the point where you are looking to buy houses in the Milwaukee area, you will see a lot of just random toilets. Sometimes they're like covered and in spaces, but sometimes they'll just be in the corner of a room.
All right. Well, there you go. Anything else? Or was that your list?
What was the last word that you mentioned?
Uncouth.
Uncouth.
That is lacking good manners.
Yeah. That one I knew as well.
Yeah.
All right. We're doing okay. We're getting Will smarter. We're getting me smarter. Joshy's educating everybody. I think we're getting you smarter.
Will, no. The only person making me smarter is myself on this program. let's be clear on that. Will has been bragging about using big words, and I think I'm rubbing off.
Okay, but
on
here's
him.
The thing: he bragged after using the term animosity today. That's not impressive.
I mean, he's more of a one two syllable guy.
That's true.
But I also used it correctly, which was against all odds.
Big win.
Okay, you're right. We should celebrate the big wins.
Uh-huh.
And that's a big win. Happy for you, Will. Good job. All right, we're back with you Friday, beginning at 12:30 Central, ESPN Madison, ESPN Milwaukee. I take that back. We're off Friday. We have the AmFam Championship. Yes, I will not be here. I will be on the Homer Hour from 5 to 6. So, no show. We changed up the lineup on ESPN Wisconsin. Jim, Matt, and Molly will be on at noon on Friday. Therefore, no Mr. Irrelevant on Friday. So we will be back with you at our normally scheduled time on Monday, beginning at 12:30. But you can catch me on the Homer Hour tonight and Friday. You can catch me on Sunday Karma Sunday. Plenty more where that came from. Just won't be with Josh. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. So good job this week, Josh.
Good thing for you, bad thing for the audience.
I'll talk to you at some point in the near future. I'm Alex Rowe. Peace.